Welcome to Taking Notes, the Lotus Notes and Domino podcast. Here are your hosts, Bruce Elgort and Julian Robichaud.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the ninth episode of the Taking Notes podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort, here with my trusty co-host,
Julian Robichaud.
And today we're here with Bill Buchan from a town near Aberdeen, Scotland. And Bill, say hi to everybody.
Hey, how's it going?
Today we're going to be talking about application development tips and tricks. And for those of you who don't know Bill, Bill is a pretty prolific speaker. And Bill, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Bill Buchan, father of one, got a motorbike, got a mini, bit of a party animal, it must be said. For instance, if you're going to go to Lotusphere, you see a guy walk past you in a bar wearing a kilt, that'll be me. So say hi. So, where
Bill,
am I? Where am I located?
You're about, what, 4 foot, what?
About 3 foot eight, but okay, I'm about 16 foot in circumference. So it's easier to walk over the top than it is walk around, yeah.
All right. Just wanted to make people aware of some of your limitations, so.
I think of myself as a sort of gray Oompa Loompa with halitosis, and that's pretty close.
That's a very flattering self-image you have.
Absolutely. Always gets the girls, I tell you.
So, feel free to offer Bill a Tic Tac or some dentine gum when you see him.
So where am I located? I physically live near a place called Aberdeen in Scotland, which is very nice. But for the last 10 or 12 years of my professional working life, I've been on aeroplanes almost on a weekly basis, either to London or Amsterdam or a charming little place in southern Holland called Eindhoven or Brussels or Copenhagen or just about anywhere else, really, where, you know, where people have notes, big notes installations. And, of course, they sell beer. So I've been around quite a bit. Most of the time I worked as a senior consultant for Lotus Professional Services, who are now called ISSL, mostly in big IBM customer projects. It's been good fun.
And you've been a consultant for 30 or 40 years, I think?
It feels even more. It feels like 80 or 90 years. I feel as though I've been living notes for at least the last 12 years.
kind of dog years.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. Or salmon days. Yeah, it's a different thing altogether. But yeah, I've been doing notes professionally since about 93, or notes version 3 or thereabouts, and then about being a technical consultant since about 95, again on version 3 and version 4. And right up to date, where I'm doing version 7, 6, 5, and 4.6 all at the same time on multiple platforms.
Wow. So yeah, right now, like over the last year or so, I guess, you know, obviously your focus has probably changed a few times. What do you think what do you say you specialize in now?
Well, interesting question. Right at the start, I thought to myself I'd be the world's best developer, and obviously I'm still working on that.
Because
what
I
tend to find is when you work in, well, obviously you are. So what you tend to find is every couple of years you get really bored either doing all app dev or all infrastructure or project work. So what I've consciously done in the last sort of 10 years is switch between infrastructure, project management, application development, administration style roles, you know, almost every year. So, I mean, the last big project I did was a 4,500 user migration, where I was project managing and doing all of the server upgrade work, which is always good fun. So I feel that, you know, driving on both sides of the street, both the admin and the dev side, is, you know, delivers your customer far more benefit. You know, if you're doing a lot of server upgrade work, you need a quick bit of Lotus script, then you can do that yourself. That's great. You're adding much more value. So I've tried to, you know, stay on both sides of the street. So, for instance, I'm a dual PCLP in version 3, 4, 5, and 6, and I'm also a dual CLP in version 7 on both admin and development, which just kind of means I'm sad and introverted and kind of like exams a lot, which is kind of odd.
We already have that information in the show notes, so...
Oh, sorry about that. And if anyone would like to give me lots of money, my address is. So yeah, I don't really specialize in anything. I'm a sort of jack of all trades in some respects. So I mean, I've done C API stuff, I've done bits of Java, bits of JavaScript, lots and lots of Lotus script formula language, admin and server installs on EIX, Solaris, Windows, Linux, and hell, that's just the stuff up in my loft. And then, of course, one customer a couple of years ago was all iSeries. So, you know, it's good to sort of get around and see Domino in lots and lots of different ways and different places. It just gives you a lot more experience.
So, Bill, what are some of the larger Notes deployments you've had the pleasure of working with?
Pleasure might be the wrong word. I worked on a number of very small ones, Uber, before I started working almost full-time for Lotus Professional Services back in 95, 96. And they put me onto various projects, working for a very large electronics company based in southern Holland, I'm sure everyone can guess. As part of the Y2K compliance, they were changing something like 30 to 35 different email systems in 100 different countries on all five continents with about 110,000 users. And they're going to throw all of those out for a single Lotus Notes system. So we've migrated people from Exchange, 5.5, MS Mail, CC Mail, and a whole bunch of other, you know, smaller notes installations into this large environment. And I think we ended up running 100,000 users on five domains on Domino 4.6, using about 635 AIX servers spread worldwide. Of course, my part in that project was quite a small one. I focused on the administration tooling and the application registry lifecycle tooling. I was literally hundreds of guys working on that project. So, I mean, that was a really good project to get involved with. Ironically, now what you find is when you get CVs through from consultants, if they say they've been in the project, then they generally speaking haven't been. And of course, we know all the people who have been in the project, and they generally speaking don't put it on their CVs anymore. So that was a really interesting project for a whole, you know, number of different reasons. Bear in mind, back in 4.6.1 days, you really couldn't put more than 50,000 people on a single domain. We didn't have directory assistance. It was all, you know, cascaded name and addresses. 4.6.1 was they just did a revision of Lotus Script, as I don't know if you recall, but between 4.5 and 4.6, there's a new version of Lotus Script with a whole raft of changes, which all had to be accommodated as part of the project as well. And of course, 4.6.1 wasn't what you call a blessed release. It didn't do certain things, such as public key checking, very well. So that was an exciting project in terms of the number of complete and absolute disasters we had. But we still hit the timescales. We still got the users in and running and so on and so forth. That was probably the biggest one I've, you know, had direct influence in over the last 10 years.
And then just some 50, 60,000 user bases scattered around here and there?
Well, no, I mean, the next biggest one is really a big pharmaceutical company. And again, they've got 110,000 users over three domains.
Wow.
And I think they're still in the process of migrating people off Exchange 5.5 onto Domino 6.5 and iCDs, for instance. And I was only involved in that particular environment in the application management domain, where we were migrating applications from old NT version 4.5 servers onto 6.5 ICD servers. And that's really kind of where most of the conversation for today is coming from. Wow. Another couple of notables was a very small Dutch insurance company. By small, I mean sub 20,000. Of course, that's very, very large. And again, they were migrating right about the same number of databases, about 18,000. On that particular project, we helped IBM out a lot by writing them a tool that would automatically do code weakness checking by exporting everything as DXL and then parsing in Lotus Script, working out what the Lotus Script was doing, and then throwing up errors based on 100-120 odd rules that we developed. So that was good fun, because we were able to analyze 18,000 databases in the space of 2 or 3 weeks, and then, you know, point developers at the, you know, 1,000 or so databases that they still wanted to retain that had issues.
Like, so what kind of issues did you? I mean, you built this little intelligence system to go look for certain types of code.
We were quite surprised. You see, I mean, if you're moving from 4.5 to 6.5, you expect to see one of, you know, maybe four or five different programming issues that have to be resolved. For instance, the evaluate function in Lotus Script, where you can pass formula language, you know, commands via Lotus Script and get results. That changes its signature. It started passing by variants instead of a string.
Right.
So we'd identify all the code that, you know, used evaluates, for instance. But that was a very small percentage of the whole total. I mean, what we were really surprised about was between 10 and 20% of the applications, both in the pharmaceutical and the insurance company instance, they all had hard-coded server names, hard-coded database names, and hard-coded replica IDs, which doesn't really make the applications that portable.
Did you find my name in that code?
Surprisingly not, but I do have a list of names that I did find, and for a very large fee, I will not publish that list of names on my blog. Some very notable people on there as well, but they wrote the better stuff.
Right.
But yeah, if you're doing very large application migration stuff, then you know, the biggest single problem is hard-coded references in databases to other databases. It doesn't really matter if it's a hard-coded reference to, say, names.nsf on the server or the user's mail file, because at the end of the day, you know, there are functions that will give you those values very quickly. But typically it was an application suite where there were 4 or 5 different databases and they all relied on having particular names and particular directories. And of course, that would be the first thing that would change when users decide to migrate their application servers from one place to the other.
And it's interesting because when you talk about big, I mean, you know, when I talk about big, I talk about a 60 gig database or something. When you're talking big, you're talking about 100,000 users.
100,000 users, 18,000 databases, So many databases, you can't spend time on each one. You know, if you've only got 5 databases, you know, it's far easier just going in by hand and spending a couple hours each. But, you know, when it takes 4 years to do that for the application suite, you know, you can't use those techniques.
Now, at a big site like that, do you think have you noticed that the databases themselves tend to be a lot bigger, or there's just a whole lot more of them?
Well, there's a whole lot more, absolutely. I think the pharmaceutical company, we found out a 12 gigabyte mail file in the wild. There's a senior member of their management team who just refused to use archiving, refused to delete anything. You know, 12 gig mail file is the biggest one I've seen in the live. And I think we had some instances of 16 and 20 gigabytes data repositories. It wasn't particularly due to the size of the environment, it was just due to the size of the problem they were trying to tackle in that particular thing. So, very interesting. In terms of size, I mean, the biggest database I've got to is something like 4 million database elements. And this is quite an interesting discussion itself. Lotus Notes is, as we all recall, a PC-based system and is very CPU-intensive. I know some customers who run on Z series, would you believe?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I know some customers who run on Z series, the old IBM 360s.
Okay.
Very, very, very big tin. And they love those machines because they're very, very stable. I mean, nothing ever crashes on them. But what they have a problem with is those machines aren't particularly good on CPU. So if you have a cluster or if you have an environment where your Domino servers are on Z series, some of these customers might end up putting the admin P processing server, especially in a 6 or a 7 environment, onto an Intel box just because there's much more CPU available. Now, we're at the stage now where we're trying to consolidate all these applications onto fewer and fewer servers, which is good. And in terms of disk space, this is a walk in the park. And in terms of CPU, it's pretty okay. But what you tend to find is that in the old 4.5 or 5 days, you'd have maybe 500 to 1,000 users, maybe a couple of hundred applications on that particular server. Now we're getting up to 1,500, 2,000 users on 3 server instances on the same box. And even though the CPU is doubled or trebled, we're asking that server to do far more. And the point I'm winding, I'm slowly inching my way to, is things like Indexer. I mean, Indexer in 5 and 6 is, doubled and trebled in speed and capacity. But, of course, that doesn't help if all of a sudden we're given it 10 or 15 or 20 times more databases for it to actually index. Right. Yeah? So on a big application migration consolidation project, once you've finished, you might find that the server itself is dead because all of a sudden it's trying to index 500,000 views a night and things like that. It's crazy stuff. You've got to think very carefully about indexers, how many you're going to run, and it really helps if you make the indexer temp directory somewhere else in other disk partitions, so at least you're using multiple disk I/O channels to try and funnel this stuff out.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, many of us application developers don't think about all the back end processes that the Domino server goes through to maintain certain things in those databases. We talked about application development tips and tricks. Why don't you lay out a slew of things that us Domino developers should watch out for?
Okay, well, the first thing really is an application developer is don't piss off your local admin, okay? Because he'll do some really nasty things to you, okay? And if you screw up, invariably everyone screws up, if you screw up and you've pissed off your local admin, he's not going to cover for you. You're going to be exposed to live fire from management. That's never a good thing. So firstly, be nice to your admin. And if you're an admin listening to this, have a good snicker and think of all these developers trying to suck up to you. In terms of large environments, the first thing you must always think about is have a separate development user acceptance testing, or UAT, and then a separate production domain environment. So, you know, if you're an admin, give your developers a sandbox server in its own domain that they can just mess around with and do anything they like and break it as much as they like. Then you have a separate test environment and a separate domain. And in that domain, the developers should only have normal user access, the admin should rule all. And, you know, in the live production environment, and this is going to be a very controversial point, the developer should only have normal user IDs and should not have designer or even editor access, even to the applications that they've developed. That's very bad practice indeed. Now, the reason, you know, I'm laying this out is because, you know, 10 to 20% of the errors that typically stopped all these databases, 36,000 databases in 4 years being migrated, 10 to 20% of that was hard-coded server IDs, database names, and replica IDs. And that's just really sloppy practice. So if you're an application development guy sitting here, you know, listening to me droning on like this, if you've got any external dependencies whatsoever, anything that you're referring to outside your current database, spend the extra 5 or 10 minutes, you know, giving the your admin guy a fighting chance of having this work by sticking a profile document that lists all the external dependencies so that somebody can configure it. Secondly, never make assumptions about what your current database name is or what your current server name is or even what's on that current server. I mean, a very common mistake is to assume that names.nsf on the current server is a full copy, and of course in 6 and 7 with directory assistance and remote directory server directory provision, you know, that may not be the case. So really, from an application development point of view, don't hard code anything. And if you do need external references, you know, use a profile document for God's sake, and that will save your ass time and time and time again. The second thing that application developers really have to consider is, especially on views, do you need all these views? You know, you've got categorized views available to you now. You can do DB lookups and categorized views. You can't get off with one system global view with categories that you use for all your internal lookups. So you don't need 15 or 20 views. You just need one that's been built in an intelligent manner. When you get to user-facing views, click sorts, you know, when you click on the column header to sort it, that's really cool. But don't switch on click sort on every single column, because every time you click the little checkbox, Notes has got to go off and build and maintain another view to support that. I've seen, you know, 400 meg databases with 2 gigabytes of views index, because one guy just decided to make every single column in this database click sortable, and it gave the users absolutely no additional, you know, functionality whatsoever. That's the kind of common mistakes.
Just a kind of an aside on that point. The two ways that I know of to tell exactly how big a view is in a database, how big the index is doing a show database on the server.
That would do the trick.
I believe going into the log.nsf file shows how big the index is. I think there's a document. Is there a programmatic way of doing that, or do you? I've never found one, and I'm curious.
I've never found one either. But if you go into Domino Admin, I'm just doing this here. if you go into Domino Admin, look at the files, select a particular file. Select a particular file on the right-hand side, open up the database twisty, and click on Manage Views. That'll give you a list of all the views in that database and give you the size of them as well.
Okay. And I point that out because a lot of times you don't realize that an index is, you know, 200 meg or something like that, and that there are some things you can do to really make those smaller.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, every time.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's a big thing. And just bear in mind that indexes having to do, you know, 5, 10, 15 times, you know, more work than it used to. So, you know, you might have some difficulties. I mean, back to the big question from earlier. The biggest database I've constructed was a 4 gigabytes, 4 million document database with only 2 views in it. But it took 8 hours on a quad processor AIX machine to rebuild those views.
Thanks.
Wow.
That's a whole working day just blown away.
Is that still an issue, Bill, with that database?
With that particular database, yes, because it's designed by a complete idiot, and that's me. You know, I could have got off with one view with far less data. So that's what we had to do in the end, to split up that
database.
Good
thing we didn't name this podcast Best Practices.
Oh, now Worst Practice, that's something else. So yeah, just be aware, you know, when your application goes live, it's going to get a lot more data in it. So when you're testing it, you know, put put a significant amount of test data in there so that everything performs as it should do. I mean, another fantastic example, and this is going way back to about 1998, this very large Dutch electronics environment had a billing application, and unfortunately had been developed in such a way that the developer wasn't aware of Lotus Notes views. So he would enumerate all the documents in the database and then go off and do some comparisons on them. When we first saw it, he was trying to run this against 100,000 documents, and it took 9 hours to run. And he was annoyed because it didn't fit into the agent manager processing schedule, unsurprisingly. And when we actually started using views on this, we knocked it down to about 45 minutes. And when we used view, the view information, instead of opening each individual document itself, it went down to 9 minutes. And that's without any changes to program logic, really. That's just using views and being aware of, you know, a slightly faster way of dealing with particular issues. Well, that's an extreme example, but you see it all the time.
Yeah, but then you change the argument from, oh, stupid Lotus Notes, to, oh, well, maybe bad development.
Oh, yeah, and I've seen a lot of really bad development.
I think option declare
should be mandatory. Everyone's guilty of doing, you know, cut and paste code where you try to solve a particular business thing. You knock some rapid application development together to, you know, to only last a couple of days, and then you come back on that site 8 years later and they're still using it. You know, horrible stuff. Everyone's done that.
Yeah. When is a Lotus Notes application ever done? Right.
Well, this is another part of the large application stuff. One of the better environments I've ever seen was again back to the big electronics firm, because it was a new environment. They said right from the start, right, we know how best to do application development. And in the application life cycle, they had to go through a testing thing, they had to go through a declaration form, they had to, you know, put that application template in a database, and then it got deployed from there, and so on and so on and so forth. And that way they can actually manage the thousands of applications that they deal with. And that's a good example. So, you know, over a period of time when the application usage tailed off, but, you know, perhaps as a project-based application, that project's no longer in use, then they can archive that database or just get rid of it. Two or three other environments I've been in, they just didn't know, you know, when people were not using those applications anymore, because they didn't know about database properties, user usage, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about small environments here. So we found maybe 30-40% of the databases we had to migrate hadn't been used in 3 years. So it's really back down to application lifecycle management.
That's a practice.
Hang on, let me just have some more beer here. But yeah, application lifecycle management, I almost said lifestyle again, it's really important. You've got to know who put the application there, why, and who's paying for it. Because in 2-3 years' time, if that application is still going, you're going to have to go back to the application and say, look, give me some more money so I can migrate it onto, you know, whatever is the latest platform that we're playing with, whether it's, you know, it might be Notes 9 or a new piece of hardware or whatever, or you know, Hanover or whatever. So you've got to keep track of these things, and you've got to be quite anal about it, you know, for it to work well. Or else you just end up with a whole bunch of application servers with thousands of applications that you just don't know about. And that's not good management in anybody's books.
So throw some more tips at us, Bill.
Ooh. I'm just trying to wade through the vast morass of nightmare stuff I've done in the past and come up with some quick and dirty ones. Try and always code for maintainability and simplicity. Yeah, if you're writing a complex piece of code, make the assumption that you're going to wander in a Monday morning with a really bad hangover and not understand what you wrote. Okay? So always code in such a way that it's easy to understand, it's recognizable. Don't over-comment. Don't stick it in comments, you know, everywhere, because it just gets really tedious. But, you know, try and make the assumption that whoever comes back to this is going to come back to it blind, and he's going to come back to it in a big hurry because it's went wrong and he's going to fix it quickly. So give whoever's going to follow you, and it might be you, you know, a big chance, you know, by
the
making
blind
it easy.
Leading the blind just came to mind here. But
well, exactly, yeah. Because, I mean, we've all looked at pieces of code, you know, 1,000 lines of spaghetti, and you think, oh, my God, where do I start? Well, you start by rewriting.
But it runs the largest electronics firm in Europe, so.
I wasn't thinking of a specific piece, but, you know, you get the idea. So always code for maintainability and simplicity. And if you have to code for performance for a particular reason, then, you know, go back and code for performance. But don't start off using every trick in the book and thinking you're going to get extra points for it. No, you just, you know, you keep it simple and you keep it predictable.
Now, and that brings up documentation. How do you like to see your documentation?
I think the word's mandatory and enforced by firing squad. there doesn't have to be a lot of documentation, but if you're doing something really odd, like doing CAPI calls in a scheduled agent or doing CAPI calls on a local workstation, then you really need to document those because those are the things that are going to break. You know, if you change platforms, say Windows to Linux for some odd reason, you know, half the development team might have moved on somewhere else by then, and then all of a sudden all the applications break. So, you know, in your application registry or application repository, you've really got to write down, you know, what's odd, what does it depend on, who owns it, what's the predicted life cycle, is it going to be there forever or there for 6 months, what kind of size is it going to get to, yeah, will it need archiving at some stage? A really important one, especially in the more critical industries, is this application under some form of certification? Yeah. In the pharmaceutical industry, for instance, they have big auditing, and they have situations where particular servers in their computing environment are blessed or certified by some authority. And if you touch those, they've got to go through another 6 months recertification. So, you know, not only the technology critical or the application critical stuff, but some of the business critical and stuff as well. For instance, in the offshore oil industry, if it's a mission critical safety system, then you've got to say that in the notes somewhere so that somebody can at least make the call that this application's got to be on the disaster recovery machines, for instance. You know, that sort of stuff.
I know another best practice that I don't know if you work with, Bill, but have you ever heard of the OpenNTF OpenLog application?
Absolutely, and this is an application that we're going to try and build into our own particular third-party product that we've built. We've kind of looked at various people's logging systems, such as the OpenNTF one, and we've kind of went a little bit further in our own application. But I think that's a really good basis for a corporate to turn around and say, right, at least all the applications have got a minimum level of logging.
Excellent.
And if there's any form of exception whatsoever, at least it gets reported, even in a central location, so that the guy in charge of the application, the application administrator, can then get out his really big stick and go and beat whatever developer's responsible to death for that. That's really good stuff. Instead of having to dig through, you know, thousands of application logs every night. You know, it's a really good, easy, quick win.
Yeah, I know the guy who wrote the OpenLog application, so.
Yeah, do you?
I've met him once or twice, too. He's a nice guy.
All right, yeah. Yeah, last time he passed by the mirror, huh? it's good stuff. It's good, reliable stuff. And, you know, if you're a corporate application developer out there, you don't have to do everything from scratch every time. You know, go look around for these tools. You might have to get internal permission to use some of them.
Correct.
You may be working in a really odd legal framework, but that's not normally a problem. Hey, boss, can I save myself 3 working days by using this? Yeah, no problem, is usually the response.
Yeah.
just make sure you ask the question.
And in terms of just enterprise solutions, I guess, you know, probably in these big environments, I'm sure you've run into a lot of competition in the enterprise space. How does Notes rank? I mean, it's you know, world class enterprise solution, has some problems. You know, how do you put it?
Politics. It's really odd, and where I've been, Notes has always been the application infrastructure environment for small to medium sized business applications within this enterprise. So if somebody wants a discussion database, it's a Notes database. If somebody wants a quick tracking system, it's a Notes database. So it's very odd because I've not seen, you know, many, you know, Microsoft SharePoint things up against it, because SharePoint just doesn't scale. It doesn't provide that level of richness. It's a very nice UI. I mean, it's, you know, really pretty, but, you know, anything based on Jet isn't going to scale, it isn't going to cluster, it isn't going to fail over, you know. So you tend not to see application competition in that respect on fat clients. What you see a lot of course, is internal websites running on Apache or whatever, running PHP applications because that's what the developer last did. Another huge source of competition is SAP. SAP seem to want to get in there and, you know, own every single business space within the large enterprise, you know, right up to, you know, hosting portals and things. Which brings me on to, you know, IBM Portal and Workspace. And I do know of some companies, some very big banks, for instance, who use a lot of Portal and Workspace. And that seems to be where they want to go with the more business-critical applications, you know, the ones that they run their business on, whereas Notes tends to be used for an information system and that particular requirement, you know, a non-critical information system. So, you know, they'll chuck in workflow to, you know, authorize new hires in Notes, but they'll use Portal and you know, work. You know, the bigger TIN systems and the DB2 backends for, you know, actual transaction processing, whatever, as it should be. It's odd because ever since the Zoller incident, where Zoller gave the impression to some large customers that IBM weren't as supportive of Notes as perhaps the large customers were led to believe. That happened in, I think, 2000, 2001.
Oh, I was going to ask you which Zoller incident it was, but okay.
Which? we're not talking about the blue spacesuit incident where, you know that was just humiliating for the poor guy. You know, that was really I was in the front row of that, and I thought somebody had really stitched that guy out, you know. Classic. But yeah, I mean, for the last, yeah, since about 2001 to about 2003, maybe early 2004, I've seen a lot of large corporates who have put Notes onto the, you know, the legacy application list, in that they won't perform much new stuff with that. And then I've been involved in some projects, web service enablement projects, for instance, where we've run web services on Domino 6 servers using script servlets, and then using Domino 5 and Domino 6 clients, just with Java agents to push web service information back and forth. And that's been a really interesting exercise, because at one stage we thought we could scale a single Domino 6 server running on a fairly powerful AIX box, granted, but we thought it could support 50,000 online users. Now, that's not 50,000 concurrent, obviously. This is an application that gets used once or twice a month, so we're only talking about 2,000 concurrent. But this application was one that this particular company was going to, you know, use as a huge part of its remuneration. Oh boy, sorry about that. Remuneration exercise. So it was rather business critical. So when we were able to demonstrate quite quickly that web services could easily transport data in and out of Domino and do it very, very quickly in a very efficient manner, then that got that company to pull Notes back off the legacy application development list. Yeah. So what I would say to anybody out there who's listening to this is, web services, you know what makes sense, just get out there, just start using them, start using web services to hook your Domino applications into the rest of your business infrastructure, whether that be SAP or Microsoft SQL databases or DB2 or Oracle, whatever. You know, take the 15 seconds or so it takes to learn web services. You know, look at Julian's site.
Or listen to
site.
The Web Services Part 1 and 2 podcast we did back in, it was a long time ago, November.
Precisely, yeah. There's a lot of web service stuff out there for Domino, and it's all good stuff. So, you know, get stuck in.
You know, it's been hitting the blogs again, on Ed's blog and Volker's blog, talking about, you know, Notes sucks, this and that. I think, you know, the people tend to, you know, want to say Notes can do everything, and that hurts us a lot. You know, we know what Notes can do and what it can't do. And if we, how would you say it, if we maybe back off from the, you know, Notes can do it all type of thing. Well, I'm going to edit this part out anyway. So,
well, I think that an important part of all that is, as far as, you know, no Notes sucks or whatever. I mean, really, given the right context, everything sucks.
Exactly.
Frankly,
if you take anything away from this podcast, that in the right context, everything sucks.
Yeah, you can write really shit code in any language. What I would say is Notes is really good at, you know, non-structured application information sharing in very large environments where you need security and workflow. That can be thick Notes client, that can be web service, that can be to your Blackberries, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Notes is good for that non-transactional, you know, non-number crunching stuff that DB2 and Oracle and SAP and whatever are there for, you know.
Well, just so you know, I think... you'll be seeing at Lotusphere, a little off topic here, but Ehrlich Krauss and I think Julian and a couple other people helped develop some BlackBerry, some access for the OpenNTF help project to access, you know, open tickets and stuff using web services for the BlackBerry. So I think you'll see that at the RIM booth, and I may have some screenshots in my session. But sorry.
Yeah, and my name probably doesn't even belong on that list. I was just very periphery. Ehrlich and I just had some conversation around it, so, you know, right. It was all them.
I think it was Alex Jansen who coded it.
Is that okay? Is that who the other one was? Maybe there was someone
That's
else.
Very cool stuff. It's not surprising. It's the sort of stuff that we as business integrators should be out there doing all the time. Let's face it. I mean, it's good for him. Anything with our BlackBerry right now seems to have a huge cachet in the market because that's one of the few things that people will enthusiastically spend even ridiculous amounts of money on, which is great.
So yeah, CrackBerry, right?
I'm going to retool as a BlackBerry guy, certainly, yeah. Well, the one thing about BlackBerries that concerns me is I just came off a BlackBerry training course, and I understand it's very difficult to get BlackBerry Enterprise Server to automatically fail over. So us from a Domino background, that's a big hole. We're used to mission-critical systems being clustered, being on separate hardware, being available 24/7. And all of a sudden, if your CEO's personal mail system, the CrackBerry server, goes down, and he doesn't get his mail for half an hour, that's scary stuff. So I think there is a product weakness there within BlackBerry that I think it's going to get addressed fairly quickly. Well, that's what I thought, yeah. I've ordered my Ferrari now. It's in a nice red. All I need is about 100 customers. Edit that bit out, obviously.
That'll be the title of the podcast.
So we have, what, 2 weeks till Lotusphere?
14 days. How many hours?
To the official start of Lotusphere, to the Sunday night party. So are you doing a session at Lotusphere, Bill?
Absolutely. I'm doing two sessions, would you believe? There's one session that we're running from last year, which is BP312, Object-Oriented Lotus Script Tips and Techniques. Now, this was a very well-received presentation last year, which I was very surprised about. It was my first Lotusphere presentation. I'm going to be diving a lot deeper to show people, more and more techniques you can use within Lotus Script, object-oriented techniques, to save yourself time and money and pain and make it a lot simpler. Again, you've got a code for simplicity, for maintainability. Another session I'm doing with a chap called Paul Mooney of Blue Wave in Ireland, a really good guy, is something that we talked about in the bars last year at Lotusphere, which was BP106, worst practices in Lotus Domino. Why worst practices? Well, Lotusphere is all about best this, best that, and whatever. But nobody ever talks. There's always been this elephant in the room about, what happens if you really screw up?
I've seen that elephant.
Yeah. I mean, we've all been around that elephant, especially when it, dumps on your desk. I think it's useful from an experience point of view for all these people who might just be starting off with Lotus Notes or just run very good Lotus Notes systems in the past, just to understand, what can go wrong. Some really funny examples. They're all anonymized, of course.
Don't put my name in there, okay?
I'm also doing something in the ISV Theatre now. I think this is something that people at Lotusphere should support a bit more. The ISV Theatre is in Europe 6, I believe. It's an opportunity for ISVs such as myself to get up on our hind legs and do a 20-minute infomercial on our solutions and cover them in much more depth than you'll get at the stand. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on there. If you look at Ben Langrich's Lotusphere session database, they're all in there. And of course, everyone involved in the best practice track, I believe, is on the Gurupalooza stage again this year.
Wow, that means I get to be on the Gurupalooza stage. Wow.
I certainly hope so, Bruce.
Okay.
Now, what I would say is that I've been in Lotus Notes for, 40 dog years. And I sat on that stage last year, and I think I answered half a question because some of the other guys on that stage were just like infinitely better at what they do than I could possibly aspire to. I would say is Gurupalooza is a must. Go along there with all the really nasty questions, and they'll get answered.
I was going to say, I felt like such a smart Notes and Domino guy before the advent of blogs and everything, and I just realized how dumb I really was compared to you guys out there, so thanks a lot.
Well, no, Bruce, I wouldn't go along with that attitude. Domino is too big a product. It's way too fat. It's an elephant. I mean, there are 1,200 different fields on the server and the server config document you've got to manage. There's over 4,000 fields in the policy documents that you've got to try and manage. And I would ask you know, no one person can possibly know everything there is to know about LotusScript, Java, C API, server admin, server configuration, and every single Notes third-party product. There is no way you can be that good at absolutely everything. And every day I go into customer sites and I find out something new about it.
Okay, Bill.
So
I feel
you've just got to say, you know, what the hell? You'll try your best, and you always hit these new stuff. But all you're going to do is, you know, treat it professionally and just go in and do the proper investigation and, you know, all that sort of stuff. That's all you can do.
Just be honest.
Feel bad about it. Yeah, for once.
Oh, gee, thank you guys. Hey, you know, it's been a great time sitting down at the in the podcast studio here with you guys, talking about
the podcast studio.
Podcast studio. Bill in a town near Aberdeen in Scotland, right? Julian in Jacksonville, Florida, myself in Vancouver, Washington, USA. We've had a good session here with Bill Buchan, who you'll get to see at Lotusphere, Julian, who you'll get to see at Lotusphere, myself, you'll get to see at Lotusphere for those of you who are going.
Bruce, are you going to see anyone at Lotusphere?
No, because I'll have my seeing eye dog. He'll translate for me. So.
Excellent. Sorry, that was cheap.
No, it's okay. Michael Sampson, our talking news guy, is on vacation. Julian, we got to talk about his pay. You know.
Yeah, I'm just very disappointed.
3 or 4 weeks of talking news, and he's on vacation already. But we do have a one-minute tip from Jess Stratton on her end-user power tools, which you can find on the OpenNTF site. So take it away, Jess.
Hi there. I'm Jess Stratton, and one of the latest apps I submitted to OpenNTF is End-User Power Tools. There's two main features. It can create mailing labels for any database that has contact information, and it can allow users to have multiple rich text mail file signatures that they can choose from. The database was designed to literally be dumped locally in the data directory for each user and act as a plugin to other databases by use of smart icons. The mailing label features allows the user to be in any folder or view that has contact info, and they can just click on the smart icon to get started. The cool thing is that the info doesn't have to be visible in the view, just the document, and the design can be hidden. From there, they're given a label designer in which they can, in a way, drag and drop fields onto a virtual label. The signature file allows them to create the SIG files in a rich text field and store it in the database. When they want to use one, they just click on another smart icon, and it gives them a list to choose from and creates a new mail message based on that signature file. So that's End User Power Tool, so please use it, add to it, and help improve it. Thanks.
All right. As we said before, Bill, thanks again for taking some time to record this podcast. Julian?
Thank you, Bill. Yes. What? Huh?
No, what? And as we did last time, we're going to be sent out with a short rock and riff from Alex Hernandez of Chile. So take care, and we'll see you guys next week.
And thanks again. You take care. Bye.